Hey, my friend, it is ADHD Powerful Possibilities, and I am ADHD Coach Catherine. This week, we are going to explore resilience, and I can already hear people saying, oh my goodness, first of all, she was talking about possibilities, and now she's talking about resilience. Bear with me, because I think this is a really important episode. I will be honest, ADHD doesn't make life simple. And I was talking to a young person this week who said, if I could remove my ADHD or my autism, I would, because I think life would be simpler without them. I didn't really feel qualified to say that yes, it would or no, it wouldn't, because I've only ever lived with a neurodivergent brain, which I didn't know about until my 40s. I would say that some of the challenges I have faced in my life, I have survived, I think, because of a part of ADHD, which keeps me looking for solutions to problems that I think other people either wouldn't notice or would just decide made the whole thing not worth pursuing. So if you are a person with ADHD or autism, and you also are somebody who does not quit, but then burns out quite spectacularly, you're not alone. And one of the reasons that I've been able to keep going for so long, consistently now, since my diagnosis almost 10 years ago, is that I understand my brain and what I need and what's important. And because of that, I want to talk about this idea of resilience with you today, because it's something that we all need, but it's massively misunderstood. When you hear the word resilience, what is it that pops into your head? Is it a school assembly? For my younger listeners, it'll be, you'll have had school assemblies on resilience and a growth mindset, I have no doubt. Is it a self-help guru, somebody telling you about how to keep going no matter what? Is it an older person who has a stiff upper lip and says you talk too much about emotions, or you just have to keep going? What does resilience mean to you? Because most of us have got it wrong. Instead of thinking about resilience as never feeling down, ignoring our emotions, pushing on no matter what's happening around us, that isn't resilience. Instead, resilience is actually more about adaptability, becoming flexible and changing with the circumstances and requirements that we find ourselves facing, and still making progress towards our big goals or visions or dreams. But what has given resilience a bad name? I'm going to mention very briefly Highline reasons why so many people are wary when you say resilience. The first is, people think it means we have to rely only on ourselves. We can't ask for help. We can't rely on other people. It's all down to your inner resources. And of course, that massively ignores the inequalities that we face in the world today. There was an article in a national newspaper recently that said a healthy lifestyle may offset your genetic predisposition to a shorter lifespan by up to 60% and can increase your lifespan by 5 years. A healthy lifestyle means being fit and active, having access to fresh, healthy food and adequate housing. This is a massive ask in the world as it stands today, and there are significant numbers of people in the population who do not have that available to them. So resilience, where we're asking people to only rely on themselves, overlooks the structural inequality and barriers that a majority of people face in the world. We don't all have the same access to healthcare or education or support from family or friends or safe, adequate housing, which is wild in a first world Western country, but there you go. And so many people feel resilience is a dismissive thing to talk about. Not the way I understand it, but I know why they feel that way. In the workplace, a lot of big corporations talk about resilience and growth, and they bring in people like me to talk to their employees about resilience and well-being without addressing the systemic causes of burnout, employee dissatisfaction, why people are leaving because they're exhausted. It's easier to put the burden of responsibility for change onto the individual without saying, actually, our company culture, our institutional culture is unhealthy for the human beings that we need to make it a living, breathing, thriving, successful business or institution. So resilience has got a bad reputation because it's become a way of shifting the onus for change from the company to the individual. And of course, that leads into the other downside of resilience, which is the impact it can have on people with mental health problems. I have had anxiety and depression in the past, and I can tell talking about resilience would not help. Because when you are unwell, it makes no sense. It's like telling somebody with a broken leg, they just have to think positive when they're trying to walk around to the shops. Their leg is broken and it doesn't matter what they think. When we talk about resilience in the context of mental health, quite often people feel they're not able to express how they're feeling, and so they hold it back. And we know that is the worst thing you can do. It means you're likely to have a worse outcome and it's going to take longer for you to recover. So talking about resilience is unhelpful for many people because they think it means they can't express how they're feeling. And of course, it becomes another label. Is somebody resilient or not? And especially for young people in the school or university system, if they're labelled as not resilient, the expectation of what they can achieve and what they can do goes down rapidly. So resilience as a label is a huge oversimplification of all the things that are happening to them at that point. What is resilience? It's certainly from an ADHD point of view, it's about using our neurological resources, using our brain, the strengths that we were talking about before, to sustain our well-being in the face of the ADHD challenges that we are living with, partly because of our neurology and partly because of the way the world is designed. And the most important thing I want you to take away is resilience is a skill, not a trait. It's not something you're born with. It's something that you are taught, that you can learn, that you can observe, that can be modelled for you. And one of the reasons that's very important with ADHD is because we are more likely to avoid the difficult, the painful, the rejection, the tasks, the people, the circumstances that make us feel bad. But if we have been given the tools to build resilience, and we understand that it's something we can grow, like learning French if you're a native English speaker, then that gives you some hope. Yes, this is difficult. Yes, I'm feeling really insecure. I'm feeling embarrassed. I feel rejected. But I know I've got these skills and this information that I can use. It's about having the right tools, and it's more important if you're likely to run into a problem that requires that resilience and that group of skills more often. So we've explained why resilience has got a bad name and all the negative things that people associate with it. But we've also explained that actually it's something that you can learn. It's something that you can develop. It's like any other skill or collection of tools that you can use. And they're particularly useful for people with ADHD. So let's think about resilience and the neurobiology of ADHD. Neurobiology is just a fancy word for talking about your brain and how it's built and how it functions. But with ADHD, you have heard me mention many times executive functions. That's important because people tend to think ADHD is just a lack of willpower, whereas we know it's about the structure, that is the size, the thickness, the connections, and the neurochemistry, the amount of neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, that you have in your brain, which is different. And what might look like a lack of willpower or grit or resilience to somebody else, to me, looks like this is more difficult for your brain. However, the other thing we know about ADHD brains is they can change like any other brain. There's an element of neuroplasticity, or the ability to change and reform your brain up to a point. At any time in your life, we used to think that was just in childhood. And sure, it's easier in childhood. That's why we have these great bursts of learning. And there are points in our life where we prune connections. But we also know now that you can continue to make new connections. We know from fMRIs, functional brain scans, that change is possible at any age in a brain, ADHD or not, but it's going to look different depending on what your baseline is. Things that can help to change the shape of your brain. I was reading about something by a guy called Goggin, who was on the Huberman podcast, and he spoke eloquently about forcing himself to do things he hates to grow a certain part of his brain that he was told is connected to willpower and resilience and reward. I won't go into detail. It could be a whole episode on its own. But he was talking about, I'm going to run so many miles every day because I hate it. It makes this bit of my brain bigger. This bit of my brain is to do with living longer, being more resilient. There's a word for that, which I won't use on a PG-rated podcast, but the idea that we can target specific regions of our brain by making ourselves do something we hate is a massive oversimplification, to put it bluntly. However, there are things that we can do that help the whole of our brain and the rest of our body. Of course, the first one I would suggest is always a mindfulness practice. That mindfulness can be a type of walking. It can be a few breaths in the morning. It can be a type of reading or journaling. It's being absolutely alive to the reality of the present moment and in your body. I'm not talking about meditating for 45 minutes. It's that bringing yourself back into where you are. Can you feel under your feet? What can you touch with your fingers? What does the air feel like as it goes in through your nose and out through your mouth? That's mindfulness, and it doesn't have to be sustained for a very long time for your brain to start feeling improvements. If you want to practice daily, Dr. Kristen Neff on the Self Compassion website has a 5 to 10 minute practices that I think are especially useful for people with ADHD, and they're free. I will include a link down below, and those have been demonstrated to change your brain. So you can do it in 10 minutes a day in 2 weeks. Don't discount mindfulness because you have ADHD. It is possible and it can be adapted. Of course, there are types of therapy that can help with neuroplasticity, with helping you to think differently, which is what happens when your brain shape and function is altered. CBT, DBT, ACT, all of these have a role. It comes down to what works for you, the experience and the skill of the therapist that you're seeing, their willingness to adapt it for you, for neurodivergent brains. It's a variable thing. So I'm not going to recommend one over the other. I will include a link to a neurodivergent practitioner's website. Again, I cannot speak to any of them in particular. Other things that can help your brain: exercise. Every week I mention it in some form or another. It is wonderful for your brain. That's it. That's all you need to know. Although I have a statistic that I'm going to share with you, which is that exercise training has been shown to increase hippocampal volume, that's the hippocampus part of your brain, by 1 to 2%. And that basically reverses the loss of volume that we experience as we age. So not only does exercise make you feel good and improve your emotions, it can reverse your brain's aging rate. So another reason to get out there and start moving. And I will include a link to that in the show notes, of course. And the other thing that's really good for neuroplasticity is learning things. Now, I would say this because my top strength is a love of learning. But when we learn new things, our brain is forced to make new connections, to do things differently, to process information that we haven't come across before. So although you may feel like your ADHD brain is destined to keep you stuck and to make life more difficult, there are ways we can help it to function at its absolute best and improve those structures and connections and the flow of those lovely neurotransmitters with exercise, meeting new people, learning new things. But let's get to the meat and potatoes, the strategies to improve your resilience in the positive sense of what we want resilience to be. First of all, there are 5 elements to resilience that I think are good to set out so we know what we're talking about. The first one I want to talk about is being aware of our boundaries and limits. there's no point pushing yourself into burnout and then demanding that you miraculously recover. The important thing, and what makes you resilient, is when you recognise them without judgment. You understand the limit of your energy, you understand the amount of capacity you have, and you accept it. That is the first foundation to resilience. The second element of resilience is when we adapt things for our individual needs. I am a big visual fan, so I have colour-coded calendars, I have planners, I have pictures on my Google Drive files, the name section. I have a little emoji or icon before the name so that I can identify documents really quickly by the project they're for, what kind of task they do. Adapting tools and strategies for your needs is a foundational part of building a resilient life. Remember, resilience is about adapting and changing with circumstances to meet your needs and still having that progress, that forward motion. And the other element we want to include in our resilience foundation for people with ADHD in particular is a safe, supporting and accepting environment. And that means we need to build a network of people who understand us, who accept us at home, at work, in education. And it means people don't just accept us. I'm always a bit conflicted about acceptance or awareness. I think we need to move to affirmation at this point, where people appreciate the value of having neurodivergent members of staff, neurodivergent business leaders. We see the world differently and we bring a different set of strengths, gifts and values very often. We need to affirm that, not just accept it. So building your network of people who get you in a really deep way is essential when we want to become more resilient, able to navigate changing circumstances and demands. Of course, another aspect of resilience is continuous learning and self-discovery. I was talking to somebody about a coach called Cameron Gott, who I really admire, and he's developed an ADHD hierarchy of needs, which is a kind of springboard off of Maslow's hierarchy. And at the top, as always, is the self-awareness, self-acceptance, self-development, self-actualization. And for people with ADHD, it's about really understanding and accepting ourselves. And that means we are constantly going to be learning more about what we need, how our brain works, how we can be successful, and adapting the strategies that we use on a day-by-day basis. That doesn't mean you need to change every single thing, every single day, but it does mean we need to have some tolerance built in. I explained it today like a rubber band. So your rubber band can go from not stretchy at all to really quite long, and that is what we want to build in terms of frameworks and strategies, something that adapts both with our energy and capacity and also with the circumstances we're in. If things are too rigid, they're not resilient. They will break and crumble. We don't want that for you. And the final element of resilience for us is to be able to advocate for our own needs. And of course, to do that, we need to understand ourselves, what we need and how we work best. So let's look at a couple of tools, a couple of strategies that you can use when you are facing a challenge or a problem, a setback that maybe feels a bit overwhelming. One of them is from the kind of world of CBT and therapy. One of them is a more general coaching type, positive psychology type tool. Now, thinking about ADHD brains, we get overwhelmed quite quickly if there's too much going on, too much information, too many choices. Indecision is a big challenge for people with ADHD because of our brain structure. It's not a personal flaw. You just have a brain that can see too many possibilities and struggles to sort through much of the information. You may be somebody with ADHD who can spot a pattern and a solution very quickly. But for those of us who get overwhelmed and have trouble making decisions, the SODAS method is a useful thing to have in your toolkit. So when we want to make a decision or solve a problem, we use SODAS, which is situation, options, disadvantages, advantages and solution. And it's a step-by-step way to look at what's going on and help you to break it down. And one of the reasons that these structured models are really helpful is because, that's right, when we are under stress, when our amygdala is activated, when it detects a threat, whether that is from the guy who nearly drove into the side of you in the car park at the local Sainsbury's, or a bear, the logical circuit that deals with solving bigger problems, your prefrontal cortex, is less easily available. I used to say it goes offline, and I still think in those terms, but more accurately, your amygdala is just shouting a bit louder. The prefrontal cortex is still there. We just can't hear it so much. And there's a capacity issue with ADHD, which is the dominant circuit. And at the moment, when you have a bear or a guy going into the side of your car, it's not the one that helps you decide how to deal with a challenge. So let's get back to sodas. The situation is the first step, and you can identify what's the setback, what's the problem, and then we get to do a brain dump. And this is really good for people with ADHD because we have lots of ideas and solutions. So for options, get it all out there. What are the possible options that you have available? Even the ones that you don't think are available, just get them out there. Then we're going to look at the disadvantages and advantages of each of those options. Obviously, some of them are not going to be accessible. They're not going to be viable. But there are advantages and disadvantages to every option or choice that you've listed, and your brain has given you them for a reason. What are they? Are they really likely, but they come with a great cost? Weigh it up. And then finally, we choose the one that suits us best in that moment and which we can implement and take action on. So the SODIS method is about just helping you to break down what might feel like an overwhelming problem when part of your brain is busy shouting too loud for you to hear the decision-making part. This is really common if you're running your own business. And there are times when I have too many things going on, shocking, but I'm a person with ADHD. And I have used this in the past to make a decision based on what's the best possible outcome right now. There's no perfect solution. And I think that's what the SODIS method is helpful for. It allows you to see what's the best option right now, what can you implement, not what is your perfect outcome. The second model is the STOP technique. And again, this is one of those general techniques that floats around the internet and books and things these days. I don't have an original source for it. The STOP, SCAN, SHIFT model is very like this. Slightly different, it's adapted for use with a variety of people of all ages. But the STOP method is really good, like STOP, SCAN and SHIFT, for those moments when you're feeling emotionally dysregulated. So we know that emotional regulation is a challenge for people with ADHD. Emotional regulation is an executive function. Dr. Barclay thinks it's the major challenge we face. Whether you use my STOP, SCAN, SHIFT technique, which I will include a link to in the show notes, or you use the STOP method, it doesn't really matter, but it's about stopping. So you stand still, you stop. T, you take a breath. That is literally in through your nose, through your mouth. Observe your circumstances and the situation without judgment. Then you proceed. STOP, SCAN and SHIFT goes into a lot more detail. It's very similar. We stop whatever we're doing. We scan our bodies, our thoughts, our environment, and then we shift. Where do we want to be? What can we do differently? And the PDF download goes into it in quite a bit of detail. This is really helpful, and it's something that I have used a lot. Being online, on social media, when you are putting yourself out there as a coach, as a business person, as an entrepreneur, there will be times when people say things or things that cause you to have an emotional reaction. The STOP, SCAN and SHIFT, or STOP method, has really helped me to dial back my reactions because they were not always appropriate for a woman of 51. And yes, things still hurt. Yes, I'm still surprised by some things. Not only have I built up some fabulous boundaries, but I now use this for when things jump out at me unexpectedly. More generally, think about things like Carol Dweck's broaden and build, or growth mindset, that idea that we can change and that it's possible for everyone to develop skills and to change how we behave, how we respond, what we know. One of the slight downsides I see with this is people perhaps get disheartened too quickly, and that can occur if we don't see things going wrong as a chance to learn. I'm thinking of Ben Zander and his "How fascinating when things go wrong." How fascinating! It's more information, it's more data. So if you have a growth mindset, try to understand there will be problems, things will go wrong. You can either shout "plot twist" or "how fascinating" or "more data." It doesn't matter. The other thing to look out for is, are you celebrating your success or are you appreciating your effort? And there will be times when success doesn't come quickly, especially if you're in business for yourself. It can take years, a few years, for you to have a successful business. Obviously, if things are going terribly wrong, you may need to re-evaluate your business model. But think about, am I appreciating the effort that I put in every week, the hours that I dedicate? Appreciate the effort, not just the outcome and the success, because that is going to make it easier to persist and get closer to your final destination. That is resilience. So to summarise how we're going to build a resilient mindset in the positive possible sense of resilience, what can you specifically do? First of all, what do we mean by that? We mean we're able to surf the setbacks and see things going wrong as chances for us to grow, to change, to plot twist. How fascinating. Resilience means we cope when things go wrong and we use that information to change direction rather than give up. And this is especially important if you are someone with ADHD who gets frustrated easily. First of all, a great thing to have with a resilient mindset, if you're an ADHD person, especially if you're in business, is create flexible destinations, flexible goals. Think again about that rubber band. You might have a big stretch goal, but having a flexible goal that is, yes, ambitious and reaches that big dream, but it's got built-in milestones, it's got built-in checkpoints, whatever you want to call them, make sure that it's not so far off and it's not so rigid that you can't get to a point and say, actually, this is really good, this is great. And although lots of people talk about SMART goals, I have got a model called CRAFT, which I think is more useful for people with ADHD. And I will be discussing that in a webinar in next month, in May 2024. You will be able to download it, but if you want to come live, I will be letting you know more about that very soon. The other thing that is really important for resilience and for a resilient mindset is that self-compassion. I will include a link to Dr. Kristen Neff, who is my go-to person for self-compassion. Self-compassion also ticks the box for mindfulness and for neuroplasticity. So self-compassion is something that allows you to persist, adapt, thrive, and manage some really challenging times. I don't talk about it much, but during the pandemic, I worked in the NHS, and it was self-compassion practice that helped me recover from burnout. I'm a big fan, and I think it's something that everyone benefits from. We also want to focus on building these routines and frameworks that are suitable for us, because if you're surfing the setbacks, having a routine or a framework that suits your brain and your way of life allows you to adapt how you're working in a way that aligns with your strengths, your interests, your peaks of energy. And I'm going to talk about energy and time blocking and things again in future. But what is your routine? I understand some of us who run businesses have families. Some of us have families with disabilities, with other demands. It's not easy. You may discover that the only time you get to focus is between 10 and 12 at night. I cannot support that as a way to work long term. If it allows you to get something done in the short term so that you can build a more sustainable, flexible routine in the short term, I would say it's okay. But don't let it go on too long. And I will confess now, I have made a mistake. I built a routine that didn't include enough time for exercise, and I am paying the price for that. So don't do what I have done. What I'm trying to undo and change with my morning routines with Elspeth, try to build a routine that allows you to include things that we know are good for ADHD, including exercise. I think the most important one is to change how we think about things going wrong and setbacks. This is difficult because some of it is going to sound privileged, and I'm not going to deny, as a person, I come from a place of considerable privilege compared to many people. But I'm also the first person in my working class family to go to university. I've grown up with a undiagnosed disability. I have caring responsibilities, and I live in, frankly, quite stressful times, along with you. Privilege is a flexible thing here. But how we think about what's happening to us is really important for how resilient we are. And the last 5 years have been so challenging. I think if I didn't have the resilience that I'd already developed, it would be almost impossible to be where I am today. And that means surfing the setbacks. It means adapting my routine. It means all of those things, and having a thought pattern, a mindset that says, well, that was interesting. How can I change that? How can I adapt that? How can I address that inequality? How can I live with this change in my circumstance in a way that still makes me feel good? It means, what skills and resources have I got that allow me to make the most of where I am, but that also acknowledge with my self-compassion tools, this kind of sucks, but it's not forever. One thing I know, and it's something I've developed through the self-compassion practice, is that things are constantly changing, and things can change for the better. Even if things change for the worse in the short term, I have a fundamental belief things tend towards the good. And I like to think of Sherlock Holmes when I get like that. There's a line in the Naval Treaty where Sherlock Holmes has gone to visit a young man who's had a nervous collapse after an important government document was stolen. And this really terrible circumstance the young man's gone through that's caused him to have what we used to call a nervous breakdown. And suddenly he says, what a lovely thing a rose is. Our highest assurance of the goodness of providence seems to me to rest in the flowers. All other things, our powers, our desires, our food, are all really necessary for our existence in the first instance. But this rose is an extra. Its smell and its colour are an embellishment of life, not a condition of it. It is only goodness which gives extras. And so I say again that we have much to hope from the flowers. And I think that fundamentally, for me, explains why my view of the universe, although it is a place with much suffering, injustice, inequality and pain, I believe that we as humans have the power to change an awful lot. And that is because there is this universal tendency of providence towards the good, towards the extra. Perhaps that's why spring is my favourite time of year. But anyway, that is my resilience core, the foundation, I think. And so that is my trip through a different way to think about resilience, particularly for people with ADHD, and I guess in a reflective mood, why I feel that resilience is something that has got me through some challenging times, both from skills that I have learned, but also from my mindset and my belief. I would love to hear from you. Are you going to use the stop, scan, shift, or the stop method, or the SODAS method next time you come up against a problem? Are you thinking about resilience in a slightly different way now? Is it still a toxic thing that you feel is a way to push responsibility for big problems onto the individual. I'd love to hear from you. So do get in touch and let me know. Do you love roses? If you're a fan of Sherlock Holmes, let me know if you are somebody who's thinking differently about resilience now. I look forward to being with you again next week, ADHD Coach Catherine, and let's see what is possible for you this week. Until we meet again, take care.